the feel-good stories of the past 7 days on the way. Our friend Craig Baird, This Week in Canadian History, and a legendary warden, the youngest warden at a maximum security prison in American history. The guy who decided, you know, it's a good idea. Let's do boxing live from the penitentiary right across the country, right across the world. They had like top list fights in the prison. We'll talk about that and much more of the excitement of us talking in a moment on the iHeartTalk Radio Network.
It's News Talk tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. Here's your host, Jim Richards.
Not on My Watch is a brand new book that features the life of Bob Hatrack, who is a legendary warden who launched all sorts of different things and had a really interesting life. And he joins us right now. Bob, thank you very much for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You know what? It's opening day in baseball. That's where we're going to start, because you, as a young man, you aspired to be a great baseball player. Then, Bob, I hate to bring it up, but what happened?
Well, on August 19th, 1957, I lost. I was a left-handed pitcher, and I lost the four fingers on my left hand.
Ouch.
And that faced me to kind of look at things a different way in terms of what I was going to do with my life.
And why did you get into, what made you go down this road where you ended up being a warden at a legendary penitentiary?
That's an interesting story. It was kind of by accident. I was a high school basketball coach. And a legendary college coach, a man by the name of Dick Carter, who coached at Penn and in the NBA, he had taken a job as the basketball coach at my alma mater. And he scouted my team play. And after the season, he offered me the job as his assistant at my alma mater. And I took the job, and he called back a couple of days later, and he said, you know what? I'm going back to Penn, so I'm not going to be here. So here I was, you know, what am I going to do? I left my job at the school where I was teaching, and I had about three or four jobs at the same time. I had the Ryder College job. I had the Notre Dame job. My friend Jack Devine, the head coach at Fairleigh Dickinson University, wanted me to take the job there. And so what I did is I took a job there, but it was a part-time job. And so I had an interview with the warden at the Trenton State Prison, Howard Jaeger, and asked if I could come in and take over a vacant director of education position. And he hired me. And I stayed with college coaching. Since it was part-time, I worked at the prison from 8 till 3, went home, picked my wife and daughter, Sharon, up, and we drove an hour up to North Jersey. I would coach the freshman team and then drive home, and I did that every day of the week. Saturdays and Sundays we had games, so it was a 7-day-a-week ordeal. I did it for 3 years, but in the meantime, I got hooked on corrections. I was the director of education, and we had done some really wonderful things there. And so I resigned the coaching position, and there I was.
And you're in corrections at this point.
At what point?
What was it that you brought to corrections that was missing prior to you becoming the youngest warden in American history?
Well, when I grew up in corrections at the Trenton Prison, the model for rehabilitation was punishment. You know, if you could provide enough punishment, that people would rehabilitate and things would be much better. I never believed in that. And so when I went up to Rahway, that's not something I wanted to carry with me. What I wanted to do is to deal with some things that would help people reform, but also to give them a second chance at life. And so that's what we did. We abandoned the Trenton model of punishment and adopted a a model of helping people reform.
We've had stories in the news in Canada about some individuals who were incarcerated, and they don't like, I guess, the idea that the punishment is going to jail, and you, as one person in the corrections institutions here in Canada said, the punishment is going to jail. You shouldn't be punished. Like, the idea of, like, okay, now you're in jail and you get punched every single day in the face. Like, the punishment is going to jail. You're not punished in jail. So how is that looked at? Because I think a lot of people would view what you were doing as being soft on criminals, no?
Yeah, you know, but I was very fortunate that that didn't happen. It probably should have happened, because when I took over Rahway in the 70s, in this country, all the experts were saying rehabilitation doesn't work, so let's stop it and let's build bigger prisons and lock more people up. So in a way, I was swimming against the tide when I went the opposite way. And you're right. Punishment, I think the judge issues the punishment. I don't think when you come to prison, that punishment needs to continue. I think in the prison, we've got a different job. And unfortunately, too many people don't see it that way. But I did. I thought that my job was to help people reform and help them. I saw that my job was to get them to leave criminal behavior and adopt non-criminal behavior.
And why do you think that's so hard to resonate with people? Because you're right, the punishment is going to jail and hopefully coming out a better person, right? So you're not going to fall into the same crowd, fall into the same behavior, maybe learn some sort of trade, and you can be useful to society. But the idea of people going to jail and then, you know, suffering and not being better people. And if we're going to really punish people in jail, they're going to come out even more bitter, are they not?
Oh, yeah, that's what happens. And that's why the recidivism statistics are so high. That's exactly what happens in that model. People, it becomes a revolving door. People go out one way and then they come in another way, but they're still coming back. 60% or more come back. And that's why I think the model that I always saw, like, teaching people how to read and write and whatnot in prison, that's kind of what we were doing, they were doing when I got there. That's okay, but that's not what it's all about. That may be real rehabilitation.
Yeah.
But I wasn't interested in that. What I was interested in is I wanted to find a way to help people leave criminal behavior and adopt non-criminal behavior. And that was my strategy. And I did that through what I called self-rehabilitation. And I did that through self-rehabilitation groups. I had a system where, like a boxing program. James Scott was an inmate that I knew well from long before I got into at Rahway. And I asked Scotty if he would set up a boxing school for me, because I had some inmates who were asking me if we could set up a boxing program. So that became one of our groups, our self-rehabilitation group, we call it a boxing trades vocational training program. It wasn't just boxing, but it was all the trades, like quartermen and whatnot. So Scotty did that. And so we had 75 young men sign up.
So let me just stop you there, because if people aren't old enough, they might not know that those fights that James Scott he wasn't, you know, some bum. He was a guy who was rated top five in America, and those fights would emanate from that prison, and they would be national, international fights.
From Rahway State, this man,
Scott, that's absolutely true.
I want to play this for everybody.
From Rahway State, this man, James Scott, the most feared boxer in the light heavyweight division, returns. Be there for a live scheduled 10-round bout behind bars.
That would be live on NBC Sports. So that was really unique, no? People would be like, hey, you don't go to prison to become a famous boxer, but yet in many ways James Scott kind of did.
But see, we didn't do it so that he could become a famous boxer. I did it because I wanted Scotty to build a school. And he had a career in Florida before he got locked up when he was on parole. And so he was a darn good light heavyweight fighter for the Dundees out of Florida. and he got busted on parole and came back. And so I knew Scotty would be able to help yep. build a school for me. And because he knew a lot of people, for example, he introduced me to Ferdy Pacheco and others, and people that would help get us the equipment that we needed to have.
Okay, let's take a brief break here, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about that from a man who comes from the corrections background in the United States, a legendary warden at a penitentiary down in America, and his vision on how we can send people to jail, being their punishment, where they would come out better people, not people who would reoffend. That next. It's the iHeart Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to News Talk Tonight with Jim Richards on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
The book is called Not on My Watch. It involves the story of legendary warden by the name of Bob Hattruck, and he is with us right now. I got the name wrong. Hattruck is Bob.
You got it right.
I got it right. Oh, man. Yay. I should have kept on going. Bob, I want to get back to what we were talking about earlier, and there have been news stories recently in Canada where people, again, want people who have been sent to jail to just have a miserable existence while in jail. And as we pointed out earlier, the punishment is being locked up. But while being locked up, if you're somebody who is eventually going to get out, shouldn't those people have some hope, learn a trade, not fall into the same kind of crowd when they get out of jail? That's the kind of thing that you were trying to instill when you were the warden at Rahway, no?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We did back then what we called self-rehabilitation, but now in the 20s it's called desistance, and that means taking people away from criminal behavior to non-criminal behavior.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, otherwise, if you don't do those kind of things, it's a revolving door. People just come back, and I saw it happen so many times.
Yeah. Did you win? In meaning, did your way of leading and showing that we not got to make sure that if we're locking people up, they're going to get out and be better citizens than they were when we locked them up? Did that win, or has it defaulted to, no, we're just going to warehouse these people, and then when their time is up, their time is up, and they're going to go back on the street and be just as bad as they were before?
Well, back in the 70s when I was at Rahway at one, I think if we look at our boxing school, and we were less than a year old, and four of our guys were inducted into the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame. One of them was paroled, and he went out and won the light heavyweight and cruiserweight world championships.
Yep.
So he was ready to go home. He wasn't going to go out and start robbing stores again. Another man, Eddie Johnson, he left the prison and spent 30 years working for a recreation department in North Jersey. And also, he was the first inmate to ever earn a license as a boxing professional boxing referee.
I should say that all of this is in the book, Not on My Watch. But as you, I take it you're retired now. I know you were a consultant for about 21 years. Did your legacy live on, or did it default back to, no, we're just here to house people and punish people? Do you have a legacy that you're proud of that lived on, that is alive and well in the system right now in the States?
Yeah, just one thing, and it's the Lifers Group program, Lifers Juvenile Awareness Program, that became Scared Straight. That's still going on across the world, really.
You won an Academy Award for that, did you not? Okay, so
yes.
I think everybody is familiar with Scared Straight, and if they're not, I'll explain it, and maybe you can correct me. It's basically, if some youth are going down the wrong road, you take them into a penitentiary and they get to talk one-on-one with people who have completed that journey and gone down the wrong road. You're trying to give them an off-ramp before they commit a crime that's going to lock them up in a place like Rahway. Is that not what Scared Straight is?
Yeah, absolutely. And to date, there have been hundreds of thousands of kids who have been through that kind of program or something similar across the world, really. And I probably can't count the number of kids it helped save. It saved Prince Harry in Great Britain. Prince Charles decided that Harry was a problem drinking too much, so he sent him to the British version of Scared Straight, and I guess it helped him.
Who's laughing there in the background at that?
That was me.
Okay. All right. So, and that was huge, right? I mean, the fact that you would be a part of this program and it would win Emmys and Academy Awards is really quite a legacy.
Yeah, absolutely. It was something that I began. I had a lot of lifers at Rahway Prison. I looked at the accumulated time. If they all served their time, they would have to do a total of 1,300 years. And when I got there, I figured, wow, that was something that is, I just can't have those men laying around. I've got to figure something out for them to do. Well, I met with the lifers and we talked about some things, and we built something called the Lifers Juvenile Awareness, Lifers Group, first of all. That was one of our groups, the Lifers Juvenile Awareness Program. And we talked to college kids first. And the lifers came to me one day and said, boss, that dog is not going to hunt. The college kids don't understand us, and we'd be better off talking to kids. I said, right, you're going to ask me to bring kids in here. Holy cow. But we did. And, the rest is history.
What age were the kids that were, these people were lifers, meaning that they were serious crimes, right? Murders or bank robberies,
yes,
that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. Since they were lifers, they were doing life or life equivalent sentences, which is 25 or more years. So it was pretty heavy, heavy crimes. But they were so dedicated to what they did once they had the opportunity to do it. And they're still doing it today.
When you look at the correctional system right now, what are your concerns?
My concerns are that we're back in the 70s, and that's nothing works, and we've got to lock them up and throw away the keys.
And do we see that right now in the correction system in the states?
I see it. Yes, I do. I think there's very, very little interesting going on that I can point to.
And go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead.
What I find interesting is that something that we did in the 70s, the professionals are now writing about today. There's books being written about boxing in prison, boxing criminology. Can you imagine that? So I think it's probably going to be on the uptick because it's being written about a lot.
There are places in the world, I mean, the Scandinavian countries, you look at what is considered a place where you lock somebody up and it looks like it's a resort. Is there any changing that mentality, do you think, in, I would say, North America? It sounds like people just want people to rot in jail. Yeah. And again, folks, it doesn't mean that we don't think that people who have done something awful need to be punished. It's just that there's a realization that people like Bob realize that they're going to get out of jail and need to function in society, and you don't want them, being repeat offenders.
Yeah, it's really difficult because at the top level, when your boss is not in tune with what you're doing, it makes it really difficult to do what you're doing. But then you have to decide, am I going to continue to go ahead or am I going to stop? And that happened to me. My boss felt that, would you believe this? I was getting too much Scared Straight publicity. That was a problem for me. And I think what the problem was, my Scared Straight publicity was creating a problem for him because he was hearing my footsteps. And so it's hard. It really is difficult to gamble your career on something that your bosses aren't in tune with. Yeah. And so it's scary for people to go ahead and strike out to do that.
Well, it's quite a legacy in corrections, and it's all laid out in his book called Not On My Watch, Bob. Hattrack, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Jim, thanks for the interview. You were great.
Yep, thank you. That is true. It was very good. But you were good at too, Bob.
Well, thank you, sir.
Not On My Watch is the name of the book. It's interesting, that conversation, because, yes, people, bad things, lock them up. But unless you're a serial killer, in this country anyway, you're eventually getting out. So do you want to provide that you keep these people who are harmful to society away from people until you can hopefully rehabilitate them for when they do get out? The feel-good stories of the last 7 days next on the iHeartTalk Radio Network.